It's Thursday, March 26th, 2020. I'm Stephen Fee, and this is The Pen Pod, a limited-run podcast from Pen America. On today's edition, how student journalists are pivoting to cover the coronavirus crisis. Then, National Book Award winner and clinical psychologist Andrew Solomon on balancing the risks to mental health and the risks of social isolation. And finally, how do you spot digital disinformation? We've got a tip sheet for that. I'm Stephen Fee, all that coming up on The Pen Pod. Hey everyone, and welcome to The Pen Pod, a limited-run podcast from the literary and free expression group Pen America. It's not goodbye, it's see you online. Those were the parting words of the University of Maryland student newspaper on March 9th, after they published their last print edition, at least for the time being. But student newspapers aren't shutting down. They're going all digital. Student journalists have been flooding the web with critical reporting about how students' lives have been upended by the crisis. Over at Inside Higher Ed, journalist Greta Anderson reports on how student reporters are making the pivot. Recently, a student journalist from Middlebury College assembled a nationwide webinar for student editors and writers to share tips and coping strategies for reporting on the outbreak. As one student journalist tells Inside Higher Ed, "We're proving why student journalism and student outlets are so vital and important, because we do serve a community purpose." Read that story at insidehighered.com. We'll have a link at our website, pen.org. Up next, the challenges of social isolation and mental health, an interview with author Andrew Solomon. Joining me now is writer, past president of Pen America, professor of clinical psychology, and National Book Award winner, Andrew Solomon. Andrew, of your many, many books, The Noonday Demon, An Atlas of Depression, is one that comes to mind. What do you think we need to know about mental health and the mind during a major public health crisis like the current one, especially amid social isolation?
Well, I think that depression results from the combination of a genetic vulnerability and triggering circumstances. And people who have got a very high genetic vulnerability need only very minor triggering circumstances. And people who have a lower vulnerability need much bigger circumstances to trigger a depression. These are triggering circumstances. The fear that you're going to die, that people you love are going to die, that life will never return to normal, that everyone is going to lose people, and so on and so forth. All of these things are going to instigate depression and are going to be highly problematical. The other piece of it is that I think we have to weigh the merits of social isolation against the challenges that it faces for mental health. So it's obviously very important for physical health that we continue a path of people engaging in social isolation. But from a mental health standpoint, that's highly problematical. From a mental health standpoint, being completely cut off from the people you love, especially for people who are living alone, is incredibly high and incredibly real. And we have to continue to weigh the public health crisis that is coronavirus, which we protect not only others but also ourselves from by engaging in social isolation, against the problem that people who are terribly isolated and depressed are not only in great pain but also often commit suicide. So there can be lethality on the mental health side as well. And we have to keep balancing the risk. What is the risk of going outside and seeing a friend? What is the risk of staying inside and not seeing a friend? Both of them can be dangerous in very troubling ways.
The literary community is being really hard hit by cancellations and, of course, the social distancing. What can we do to support fellow readers and writers?
Well, I think writers are better placed than many people for a crisis like this, because I think when you're stuck in your own house and not allowed to go outside, not allowed to do anything, it can be your own private artist retreat. You know, it's like being at Yaddo or McDowell without anyone else, where you just sit and are able to do a great deal of writing. But the cancellations and so on that are going on of all kinds of events are having a severe and specific economic impact on writers, and that can't be underestimated. So I think we have to try to support writers as everyone else in a time of economic crisis. And I think a lot of writers, especially if nonfiction, but even in fiction, rely on research. And while some research can be done online, a lot of research takes place in the context of human interactions. And there aren't going to be human interactions of the kind that undergird so much of literary accomplishment. I mean, I myself have had to cancel sort of 20 interviews and 2 interview trips that I had set up for the next couple of months. It's, you know, it's a pretty dire time. That being said, if you're stuck in social isolation, there's little that's better company than a really good book. And so finding a book that you can read and finding books that you can connect with can give you a sense of being attached to the larger community, even in circumstances when you are, in fact, in total isolation.
Andrew, as a writer, you've written about and traveled the world. Now that we're all a little bit more shut in these days, what can we do to stay global?
You know, my last book was called Far and Away, How Travel Can Change the World. And it argued very strongly, or at least as strongly as I was able to, for the idea that more travel actually would result in fewer diplomatic crises, and that our interactions with people in other cultures and other societies are essential to maintaining our sense of perspective and reducing the us versus them mentality that has so hideously been realized by the Trump administration. As I have worked on the subject of travel, I've always championed it. And now it's this moment when everyone is canceling their trips, when I've canceled trips of my own, when everyone else is having to cancel their trips. I think it's going to be politically dangerous. I think it's going to lead to greater nationalism. I think it's going to lead to greater jingoism. I think it's going to be very damaging. And I think the only thing we can do is to try through whatever online media or others we have to look at how is the news being presented in Italy? How is the news being presented in Vietnam? How is the news being presented in South Korea? How are people dealing with this elsewhere? And to recognize that a pandemic like this represents not the occasion of one country sort of doing something dangerous to another country, not the occasion of closing borders because people from outside are going to come in and make us sick, but rather a moment when all of us are facing a common enemy and when we can help one another. And my greatest hope, of course, is that scientists and doctors who are working on treating this and policymakers who are working on figuring out the best way to contain it will continue to work with one another internationally.
And finally, what are you reading or watching right now?
Well, I've been reading a variety of things. I've been reading Cleanness by Garth Greenwell, which I'm thoroughly enjoying. It's the novel on my bedside table at the moment. I think it's a time for escapist literature. I have a 10-year-old son. We're here together. I'm reading him The Lord of the Rings, and I'm finding that entering that world full of villainy and evil and terrible magic and so on and so forth is actually quite a pleasant way of removing ourselves from a world that's suddenly characterized by trauma and terror.
Author, National Book Award winner, and past PEN America president Andrew Solomon, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Earlier this week, a reporter told us at the Pen Pod that she'd never seen as much disinformation on the web as she has in recent weeks. Fake cures and false alerts have surged across social platforms and messaging apps. So what can you do to protect yourself? Over at Pen.org, we've published a tip sheet on coronavirus and disinformation. We offer 6 ways you can do a quick analysis of posts or stories you see online before hitting share or send. Don't take the bait. Disinformation posts thrive on likes and shares. The headlines are designed to get you scared and encourage you to disseminate their posts. Read about all you can do to protect yourself on our website, pen.org. And that's our episode for Thursday, March 26th, 2020. Join us tomorrow for the Pen Pod for an interview with Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Gregory Pardlow. You can listen to all our episodes at pen.org. Follow us at Pen America on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Sign up on our website for our daily Dare newsletter, where we track major stories about literature, free expression, and the news of the world. I'm Stephen Fee for Pen America. This is the Pen Pod. See you tomorrow.